Hello and welcome to another episode of the Transportation Exchange Podcast presented by Rush Truck Centers of Canada. I'm your host, Jason Cuddy. On today's episode, we're excited to welcome Doug Brent, who is the author of the new book, The Mysterious Case of Rudolph Diesel. Doug is a New York Times best-selling author as well. Previous novels, I guess, are The Ghost of Manhattan, The Means, Trophy Son, and soon to be this novel as well. Doug, welcome to the podcast.
Jason, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So this is exciting. We've only talked to one author before, and he was kind of within the industry doing something else and a novelist on the side. And his was more of a kind of a murder mystery novel he had, which is kind of cool. But this one, I think when we connected with you guys, this kind of just made a ton of sense given, and we'll dig into it, but given the nature of the main character of this story, who is real. And I think a lot of us probably didn't realize he is real.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's pretty wild. So maybe give us a quick little rundown of how you got interested into Mr. Rudolph Diesel.
Well, anyone who has a diesel engine, as I now do, will be fascinated by this book. It is a nonfiction book. It's narrative nonfiction, more in the style of Eric Larson or David Graham, those kinds of books. So it's not just some big doorstop biography. It's told like a novel in a novelistic way, but it tells the story of Rudolph Diesel, who invented the diesel engine. I came across the story because I bought an old boat about 8 years ago, and I needed to fix it up. And I was talking to the guy at the boatyard, and I said, what should I do with the boat? And he said, well, first of all, get rid of these gasoline engines and get diesel in there. And I said, well, why? You know, 8 years ago, I didn't know there was a Rudolph diesel, and I didn't know engines were very different one from the other. And he went into this whole thing saying 100% of boat fires come from diesel, come from gasoline, zero boat fires come from diesel. You'll get four times the range on your 200 gallon tank. You'll go four times as far as with the gasoline engines. There are no fumes. The fuel is very stable. You can light a match, drop it into a vat of diesel fuel, and nothing will happen. The engine doesn't even work on a spark. So I repowered the boat to diesel. And a couple of years later, I was in between novels and looking for ideas for a new book. And so I was clicking around the internet on various different things and came across this list of mysterious disappearances at sea. And on the list was Rudolph Diesel. And I thought, I wonder if this is connected to my new diesel engines. And of course it was. So I clicked on the link, and I'll take you into the story the way I came in, which is that the link showed September 29, 1913. Rudolph Diesel was traveling from Belgium to Great Britain on an overnight passenger ferry across the North Sea. And he disappears. He had allegedly had dinner with two traveling companions in the evening. They agreed to get together for breakfast in the morning before they put into port there at Harwich in England. And breakfast time comes around. He's not there. They search his stateroom. He's not there. They stop the ship at sea. They search the ship. All they find are his hat and his coat neatly folded by the stern of the ship, by the rail, seeming to mark where he had gone over. And so they go into port, and immediately there are newspaper headlines around the world, from New York to Moscow, all throughout Europe. Because at this time in 1913, Diesel, his story, his personal story, has been paved over a bit. But it was almost like Elon Musk going missing today. Right. He was that big of a deal because we were in the middle of this naval arms race between the Anglo-German arms race. Germany and Britain were competing for control of the seas. And at this time, the diesel engine had emerged as the only option for the submarine and the U-boat. So every naval power was scrambling for diesel expertise, and the engine was young enough, Diesel had just released it in 1897, that he was still the main guy with the knowledge, especially for the exacting requirements of undersea travel. So the headlines were going crazy with it. The prevailing theory was suicide, but there were two potential other avenues around murder, two suspects that people thought might have murdered him, either Kaiser Wilhelm, the Emperor of Germany, or Rockefeller, the founder of Standard Oil and the richest man in the world. So anyway, I came into it with all this information and then went down a 5-year rabbit hole and wrote this book.
It's wild. It's funny reading the book as well. What's, I think, interesting to see, we know diesel as a name of an engine as far as a type of engine. And I think, you know, even before connecting with this, I didn't really piece together that it was a person. It never gets capitalized properly. He clearly doesn't get the respect he deserves for what he did to the industry. But, you know, when we talk about the impact and contribution of the diesel engine, I think what you just mentioned, his contemporaries in that time frame, it's the who's who of companies now, but they all bear their name. You know, there's Lindy, there's the Rockefellers, there's a whole bunch of other, you know, Bush and Churchill, a whole bunch of people that kind of came up with him, you know, in that time of, you know, the kind of the tail end of the Industrial Revolution as it kind of gets, you know, mainstream. And it's wild to see kind of how much of a disruption he was to kind of a lot of those people's lives.
Yeah, very, very much so. And it's interesting to think that at that time, so he was born in 1858. He unveiled the engine for the first time in 1897. And in the first decade of the 20th century, it began to take hold in various uses, a lot of inland, you know, use in manufacturing. And, you know, so Adolphus Busch, as you mentioned, he back then you would license the engine by national territory for the exclusive rights to manufacture and market the engine. So the person who took it for North America, Adolphus Busch, initially to pump water in his breweries. And but he also built a separate business to build diesels for the U.S. Navy and the submarine fleet. But the diesel engine, it really was unsettled what we were going to be using as fuel at that time. And so Rockefeller played a big role. So did Edison. And in 1905, this is something I uncovered in exploring how this technology was used in different industries. In 1905, the New York City taxi fleet consisted of several hundred electric cars.
Wild.
There was a charging station on Broadway in Times Square. So now we think, oh, Elon Musk and these newfangled electric cars, maybe it'll take hold one day. That was happening 120 years ago and was a threat to Rockefeller and petroleum and gasoline. We didn't start selling more gasoline worldwide than kerosene until 1916. Rockefeller became rich because he was in the illumination business. He was selling kerosene for lighting and throwing the gasoline away. It was a waste product.
It's wild. And reading through the Rockefeller, and what I like about how you've written the book is, like you said, it's from a narrative piece. You get some really as if you're there description, but the research you've done on the history of the supporting characters, the people that have impacted his life, like the Rockefellers, you know, the amount of information, you really realize, you know, for lack of better words, what a bully he was within the industry. And you've heard of this in the past of, you know, how even how hemp went away with other people with regards to the printing press and stuff and the paper. But, you know, finding a way to move his, you know, his product throughout the country by basically kind of, you know, strong arming everybody along the way. And you can kind of see how Rudolf Diesel and his technology is definitely not well appreciated by Rockefeller.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sets the structure for the book in a way, because the main thrust is Diesel, the man and his invention. And then we have these two main suspects, Kaiser Wilhelm, the Emperor of Germany, and Rockefeller. And when you explore why they had a motive to kill him, you understand the times they were in. And it is interesting. Rockefeller, one of the reasons why Diesel was such a threat is he did not advocate for petroleum or gasoline. He won the 1900 Paris World's Fair on a diesel engine running on peanut oil. And he was advocating that every country has farmers. We can grow our own fuel. And this is echoed even more recently with Willie Nelson driving around his tour bus about 15 years ago on a bus running a diesel engine on recycled kitchen grease. And he was advocating the same thing. He's like, we don't need to be running around fighting wars for petroleum in certain parts of the world. We have farmers. We'll grow it ourselves.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, what I found interesting is as you, you know, get into him finding his technology. I mean, he's working with guys like Linde, who, you know, even in our world is like a customer for us now, right? The company, the corporation, but you get a background of, you know, where those guys came from. But just seeing how he kind of wasn't, you know, overly happy there. You could tell he had, you know, for lack of a word, a spark, you know, in him to really chase down something. And just how he comes across the idea of the, you know, in cylinder to the pressure, not needing a spark, just injecting fuel, even just how you tell that story. It's pretty impressive of how that comes to light. And then, you know, kind of understanding what his, you know, vision of the diesel engine could be. Obviously, he had a pretty good vision of thought where this could go if he could actually make it a reality.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because the book in many ways is a few different things. It's a biography. It's a murder investigation and solving this crazy espionage caper. But it's also combustion engines for dummies and a primer on turn of the century diplomacy with the European great powers and things like that. So it does a lot of different things. But in Rudolf Diesel, more than anything else in the book, comes alive as a person that you can sort of get to know a bit. And his parents were born in Germany. They emigrated to Paris in 1850. And he was born then in 1858 in Paris to Germanic parents. And I say Germanic because Germany didn't yet exist as a state that we've come to know it in the 20, 20th and 21st century, it was 39 sort of loosely affiliated Germanic kingdoms and tribes and things like that. So Germany didn't come to exist until the end of the Franco-Prussian War in 1871, which was significant for Diesel because he was living in Paris at the time that all these German nations fought France, and he was kicked out of Paris. He and his family were exiled out of France, and so they were refugees without a penny, and they emigrated to London, where we're, you know, as you hinted, we're in the throes of the Industrial Revolution, and he lived in a terrible part of the city. It's actually the same part of the city that Dickens set Oliver Twist in.
Wow.
And Diesel shows up there at 12 years old, the same age as Oliver Twist. So if you can think of that movie, that's where he was living and the age he was as a boy. And so he saw the worst things. I mean, it's almost like there's a scene of Diesel on the London Bridge looking over the city and with the smoke coming up. And it almost looks like a Tolkien version of Mordor. You know, that's the Industrial Revolution in London at that time. And he has this idea like, I can make it better. You know, this is written in their family biographies that was one of the moments where he thought, you know, as a sort of budding engineer who used to go to these museums and look at these old steam engines and things, it's like, we can do it a better way.
Yeah. And it's crazy to think, you know, like at that age, you know, 12 years old, these kids are going to work in the factories, right? That's the reality of this time. And reading that, you're kind of, you know, I have a 12-year-old, I can't picture going to work in a factory, you know, let alone getting through a day of school. Right. So it's stunning how quick that era grew up. Right. And just what they saw and, you know, the want to make the world better, to put their footprint or, you know, their fingerprint on changing for the good. Cause you saw, you know, obviously there was a lot of good happening with the Industrial Revolution, but you saw the bad too. And clearly given that they're exiled out and where he had to live, he was right in the heart of the bad, which sometimes drives people to, you know, to make change for the better of mankind almost.
It definitely did. And he had a stroke of luck because a distant relation invite. He had already demonstrated that he was a smart kid, and his sister was smart too. She was a very talented pianist, but they were given an invitation to send Rudolph as a young boy back to Germany to live with a relation and to go to a trade school where he could, you know, at least get some years of education. And as you suggest, those scenes in London were motivating for him to really work at his studies and try to climb out of that, because he knew if it didn't work out there, where he was going back. And he had a gifted brain, and, you know, in 10 years from that point, he was already then inhabiting the revered engineering circles inside Germany, which really was the hotbed for engineering at that time.
Yeah, it's impressive, you know, and it's always interesting to hear the background stories of, you know, any of these big names that you know. And you've done a really good job in the book of giving a really strong historical context and kind of mini biographies on each of the key players, so you really understand how they got to where they are when they start interacting, you know, in Diesel's life and where they cross paths. So I know for me, yeah, I learned a lot about, you know, Diesel and kind of where he came from and kind of what I'm going, but I learned a lot about the, you know, the political times of Europe during that era that I probably didn't really know. But also, you know, just even the Rockefeller thing was really interesting. Like just, you know, how he grew up and just the differences of how the two gentlemen grew up, you know, from kids and the different life state they experienced and kind of how that kind of trained them or ingrained them to be the individuals that they were. I thought incredibly well written, and it's really cool to get that depth and that background of all the other key players in the story.
Thank you. And it also gave me such an appreciation for the power of diesel technology. And just one quick example of that, the concept of a diesel powered battleship in the era of World War One was game changing. If someone had that, it was a world beating technology, because back then, if you imagine the movie Titanic with Leonardo DiCaprio, and there's that famous scene where the camera goes down into the belly of the ship and you see dozens and dozens of men sweating, no shirts, shoveling coal into these orange fiery furnaces, which are boiling huge vats of water. I mean, literally the technology is the same as boiling a pot on a stove. You're just boiling water to create steam to move the parts of the engine. And think about how inefficient that is. All the heat is getting lost in the fire, first of all, the furnace. But you have upwards of 200 to 300 men on the ship whose sole purpose is to shovel coal into a fire. You've got a whole external flame of fire. You've got this intermediary waste substance of water that you need to boil. There's chimney stacks and a whole chimney apparatus, you know, rooms full of coal, rooms full of food to feed the hundreds of people that are shoveling the coal. I mean, it's just insane. Whereas diesel is this compact little engine that draws fuel, liquid fuel, automatically down from a tank. There is no stack. There's no chimney stack at all for to release these plumes of, you know, partially burnt coal. It just releases out a vent. And so that clears the deck in the case of merchant marines for cargo, which is why you see totally flat ships without big chimney stacks, or in the case of a battleship for the guns to be able to hit any point on the horizon as opposed to having these giant chimney stacks in the way of rotating turrets. So it was game changing from both a merchant perspective as well as a military perspective.
Yeah. And I know, like, for our industry, what we do, obviously probably 80, 90% of the equipment that goes through our dealership is diesel. Right. And so we know it as a mode of transportation on the road. Diesel generators, obviously, we're familiar with, but yeah, you don't even think of, I think, because, you know, now all the ships have gone, you know, to kind of a nuclear power. So you know, in our era, you've almost forgotten that there was a diesel was the stopgap almost to the newer technology, but the difference it made, because, you know, even the efficiency of the engine itself, right? You have an external, you know, combustion engine, which is, you know, the old technology, so an internal combustion engine, and then moving to this fuel type. If I remember the numbers correctly, I think the old one was, you know, 6 to 7% efficient. This was, you know, almost 70% efficient as far as the use of fuel to produce, you know, the energy needed to do what you're trying to do. So manpower, like you said, changes the engineering of a ship, but also just, you know, way more efficient in what it does, which all around, you know, is game changing to everything. You know, you don't even, I don't think many people appreciate, you know, the impact he has on kind of everything that is our lives or became our lives just with that.
Yeah. And he was early to be thinking environmentally as well, not only efficiency in terms of how much energy can we get out of a unit of fuel, but also the pollutants and the smog of the steam engine era that were just unreal. You know, particularly in England, the whole forests were like rained with pieces of coal coming down from the many steam engines. So he was one of the early thinkers about finding a better solution.
Yeah. So we don't want to give anything in the book, but obviously the big kind of thing that holds all together is, you know, his disappearance, you know, and what happened to him. So it's, we'll let everyone kind of reach out and read it, but it's an incredible story of an incredible life, you know, with a credible ending, I guess is the best way to put it.
You'll certainly learn a lot about your diesel engine. I mean, I look at my diesels in a different way now when I get on the boat and I know this whole history of how the engine came to be, what it meant for the 20th and 21st century. And then the whole book, in large part, crescendos in this investigation. And again, I don't want to give it away either, but I will say that it's not a suicide. And the conclusion that you find, and which is endorsed by British intelligence, former CIA investigators, is concludes the matter, and it was not a suicide.
Gotcha. Well, we're gonna let people read. For those, you know, listening, I'd, you know, probably be out by them. The book is available the 19th, I believe, September 19th.
September 19th.
At all places you can acquire books, which is ever changing, but it's always nice to have a proper paperback to read, or, you know, hardcover. So we'll make sure people go out and check it out. And just to reiterate, it is The Mysterious Case of Rudolf Diesel is the actual title. So they can check that out. And one thing we do want to say before we let you go is we are actually going to help some of our listeners by giving away copies of the book. And we're going to do that by the first six listeners who email us at marketing@rushtruckcenters.ca with the subject of diesel in the email. We will ship them out a copy of the book so we can at least start getting the Canadian footprint going for you that way.
That would be great. Thank you.
Excellent.
Canada plays a big role in the story too. Another secret part of the story that you will discover in there.
Excellent. So even more reason for the Canadian audience to listen. I know we have people all everywhere, but there's a little bit of something for everybody in every country, I think, that listens to us. So hey, appreciate you making some time today. Really, really great book. Very obviously timely to what we do in our industry. And I think it's great to give this gentleman some attention and some love, because clearly he hasn't had enough of it. And he, you know, revolutionized the world for the most part with his technology. So I appreciate you, you know, giving his story the attention it deserves.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, the deficit of appreciation for Rudolf Diesel is severe, and he belongs up there with the names of Ford and Edison and Marconi and the Wright brothers.
Yeah, he's right up there, you know, and actually probably even more so because his footprint's probably bigger than most of those, even combined almost for some of the technologies they have. So
yeah.
Said. Alex, and hey, that concludes today's episode. I want to thank Doug for joining us, and to catch up on past episodes, check out transportationexchangepodcast.ca. And until next time, thanks for listening.